Hi there, everyone, and welcome to the Pets.ca podcast number 9. My name is Marco. We are coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and today is January 12, 2007. First off, Happy New Year to all our guests and all our listeners and everyone that's listened to the show, or if you've made a comment, thanks so much. This year, we intend to do one podcast a week, if possible. We're sorry we're a little late because of the holiday season, but we're back on our game now, and we intend to put them out weekly. For today's show, we have actually a special guest, Elizabeth Simpson of Tenderfoot Training. She and her husband, Doug Simpson, provide expert care on our site and on our bulletin board to our visitors. They've been doing dog training for tons of years out there in Colorado, and today we are lucky enough to be able to do an interview with them, and the interview is going to be based on starting your puppy out right. So as always, if you'd like to comment, we'd appreciate it. You can do that through the bulletin board, or you can do that through the blog directly, www.pets.ca/blog. You can leave a comment there or a suggestion, and it's greatly appreciated. So without further ado, let's get into our interview with Elizabeth Simpson. The interview is about 30 minutes long, but the information in it is incredible. And there's a lot of stuff that you won't have thought about, especially if you've just gotten a new puppy, or if your puppy is just really young and you need some expert opinions and or advice. A half hour. Let's get into it now. Okay, so we'd like to welcome our special guest today, Elizabeth Simpson of Tenderfoot Training. She and her husband, Doug Simpson, have been running Tenderfoot Training for a long time now. Elizabeth and Doug, they're our experts on our bulletin board, and Elizabeth goes by the name of Tenderfoot Training. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, thank you. So we are coming up on Christmas time, where a lot of people have gotten puppies. Sometimes that's a good idea and other times it's not. But either way, they have puppies now, and we need to know how to start puppies off right. Elizabeth, how do we start puppies off right?
Well, there's lots of things to consider. It's like adopting a child. You have to sort of anticipate ahead of time some of the things that you want to be ready for. One of the very first things that we would recommend is that you start a relationship with a veterinarian almost before you get the puppy, somebody that you feel good about. Perhaps you've asked your friends for recommendations, and maybe go visit the vet or a couple vets and interview them and make sure that you're in agreement with how you're going to care for your puppy. Once you get the puppy, it would be really great to take the puppy to the veterinarian a couple times just for social interaction. Don't worry about having an exam or getting shots that might be potentially scary to the puppy. Create a positive environment around the veterinarian before you have to do the scary stuff.
So even if you've just gotten a pet, let's say it was bestowed upon you, even without your knowledge, it was a gift, it was a surprise at Christmas time, really the second you get the puppy, you want to be calling the vet or finding a vet ASAP.
Absolutely, because you want to have that resource, especially if this is a new puppy. Something might go wrong. He might swallow something. He might cut his foot. Something could go wrong. You want to have a resource that you can contact immediately for advice.
Because let's be real, a lot of people do get pets very quickly, and they know nothing about pets, and at least they could ask the vet some of the basic questions right away.
Oh, absolutely, because you want to make sure that you're on the right program for vaccinations. And vaccinations alone right now are a huge conversation, because some veterinarians are very adamant about a very stringent schedule for vaccines, and other veterinarians, the more natural and homeopathic vets, are now saying that we over-vaccinate. So you want to make sure that you are understanding what you are giving to your puppy.
A good tip. Find a vet right away. That makes absolute perfect sense. What would be the next step after that?
After that, I would say puppy-proof your home. Get down on your hands and knees and crawl around your house. You want to look at what is going to catch his attention. What little knickknacks do you have that are way down too low that he's going to grab and think is a toy and crush or swallow? Or what about electrical cords that might be dangling somewhere or too easily visible behind the couch for him to go back there and grab?
If you had to choose one, what would be the most, obviously everything's important. What's the most common, let's say, problem that puppies get when they're in a house that's not puppy-proofed?
They will chew on your, well, your personal items like your shoes, maybe what you have in the laundry basket. They will tend to go after personal items in the laundry basket like socks and underwear and then swallow the entire thing, and then we have possible surgery. They will oftentimes, and this is amazing to me, but they will go after your remote control for the TV or the VCR, and they might even be able to successfully pop out the battery and then swallow it, and that's incredibly dangerous.
Wow. Okay.
So it's things like that that we think, oh, God, puppy's not going to go for that, but they do.
Okay. So you really have to get down there like a dog on all fours, inspect as if you were the puppy yourself.
Absolutely.
Okay. Again, a lot of good sense.
Now the other part of that is that you want to have lots of things available to them that they can put their mouth on. So get lots of varieties of toys. Two or three toys is not enough. They need at least a dozen. Puppies have a very short attention span, and so they're going to go from one toy to the next, exploring until they get bored, then they'll move on to the next one. And you want hard toys, hard rubber toys, good hard bones. You want soft toys. You want squeaky toys, toys that they can pull and tug and tear at, because every puppy is an individual, and they will have certain things that are their favorites to do.
Should all those toys be out at the same time? Will they get bored if they're all out at the same time?
It kind of depends on how many you have
okay.
and what
okay.
kind of space you have. Some people will put out six toys at a time and then keep six toys back and trade them out regularly. If you're just a toy fanatic, you can have a whole basket full, but just every day at the end of the day, maybe put them all back in the basket and the puppy can go and pick out the ones that he wants to play with that day.
Okay. Okay. So if you have 18 toys, do six one day, six new ones the next, six the next, and then rotate back kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What would be next?
Socialization is so important because you only have a window of about the first 4 months to really make a difference in your dog's life. Socialization is important for the entire life of the dog, but that first four-month window is huge. And so you want to make sure that you introduce them to all kinds of different people, all different kinds of animals, all different kinds of environments, experiences.
I'm sorry, so it's not just socialization with other dogs. It's really socialization, in a sense, with the world.
Absolutely, with the whole world. And especially a lot of people, they want to sign up for a puppy class because they think that, well, my puppy needs to be socialized with other puppies. Other puppies, they've been living with already. They know other puppies. They need to learn about big dogs, little dogs, cranky dogs, happy dogs, older dogs, younger dogs, people, cats, horses, birds, as well as environments. My house feels different than Home Depot feels, than PetSmart feels, than McGuckin's, our local hardware store, feels.
If they're outside, excuse me, they should see cars and bikes, and they should see all kinds of distractions.
Yes, absolutely. As much as you can think of. The more that you create for them, especially in their youth, the more that they're just going to take for granted in life. Oh, that always happens. Oh, we always deal with those kinds of things. Oh, look, there's more people, instead of freaking out about it.
Okay. And when should we start?
Right away.
Right away.
Immediately. Training and socialization should start right away. Puppies are sponges, and so they're learning all the time. And we want to create positive environments, positive experiences, and we can also start shaping their good manners now. The more that you teach a puppy, the greater his capacity for learning actually becomes. So it's beneficial on limitless levels. And so start your training now. You can start immediately. A little puppy knows how to do it all. He already knows how to sit and lay down and run towards you and lay on his side, lay on his back. Just start creating associations with that, and you're shaping their behavior.
So right away, the second you get them.
Absolutely. They are never too young to learn, and they are never too old to learn either. But you want to just remember, too, that puppies have a short attention span. So you're just going to do little things successfully here and there throughout the day.
Okay, I guess just my last question on that topic would be, some people get puppies too early. Some people get them maybe when they should still be with their moms.
That is a huge problem. Here in the United States, it's illegal to sell a puppy before 8 weeks old. But ideally, a puppy should actually be staying with their mother until they're about 10 or 12 weeks. The mother teaches so much, and the other puppies teach a lot, too. And mother teaches bite inhibition. But if we take the puppy away too early, they haven't learned that, and they come home as this nippy little bitey snappy puppy, and suddenly we have to teach bite inhibition. There's great advantages both socially and learning to keeping the pup with the mom a little bit longer.
So for those people that haven't gotten, puppies yet but are thinking of getting them, we don't want to get them before age what? What would be your opinion?
My perfect answer to that would be 10 to 12 weeks.
But
the realistic answer is that breeders want to get rid of their puppies usually at about 8 weeks. They've had their fill of their puppies at 8 weeks.
Okay.
Like, just take them home now. And puppies are so cute at 8 weeks. We all want to bring them home when they're tiny and cute.
And if we have one that's 8 weeks old or even 7 weeks old, we shouldn't have it. We shouldn't have one, but they're still not too young for training if we do have them.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely, because mom would be teaching them then too.
Okay.
And even the other puppies are teaching each other. So right away, and just make sure that if you bring home a puppy that young, that you're really supporting them emotionally. We are big advocates of having them sleep in your bed with you, at least for the first few weeks or first few nights to help them with that adjustment. But that's for just, you know, really, really young puppies, because they're going from sleeping with all their litter mates and their mom to potentially being in a crate or in just a bed by themselves or down in the kitchen or something, and they tend to freak out. And so it's better to support them emotionally and have them at least in your bedroom with you.
And in the best world, we're only going to adopt them after they're 10 to 12 weeks old.
Right.
Okay. After that, what would be another really important thing to do?
You want to desensitize your puppy to touching. Mama would be licking the puppy all over his body. And we just tend to pet them. I know, maybe on the head or on the top of their back. But we want to make sure that they're used to having their whole body touched. You want to massage their ears, massage their face. Literally get in and massage their gums, teach them how to open their mouths so that when the veterinarian has to look at their teeth, he knows what he's going to have a good experience, and roll them on their back gently, massage their tummies, make sure that they're used to you touching all of their toes, and actually take your fingernails and flick their little nails. It simulates clipping their nails so they get desensitized to that sensation all the way down the body, all the way to the end of the tail.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just thinking that is such an excellent idea. You know, the whole body's important, but the feet especially. So many people have problems clipping their pet's nails. If they would just start massaging them and getting them used to being touched in that area, it just makes perfect sense that it won't freak them out later on.
Absolutely. And two, if a dog were to, you know, get a cut in their paw, they're not going to have to overcome just the fear of you touching their foot in addition to the pain in the paw. They're already trusting you. It helps to build that relationship of trust.
Really good ideas. Are there certain spots where you have to be really careful with, like, a massage of your dog?
You're going to be using sort of an even, gentle touch all over their body. So, and the feet are very, very sensitive, especially the webbing between their toes. Oftentimes it's used as a test for temperament. If you touch it lightly and they react, they're a sensitive dog. So you want to make sure that you're working within their comfort zone, and then you can expand from there. But try not to give deep muscle massage, because it might be overwhelming for them.
Okay, very interesting. I would totally have to agree with that. It just makes such perfect sense. Start touching your dogs early. Give them good massages.
Oh, every day. And you'll find that they'll just sort of go, oh, it's 6 o'clock, time for my massage, and they'll lay down and be ready for it. So just make it a part of your relationship.
I guess it would also be a smart thing to do, or you tell us, if different members of the family massage the dog as well.
Sure, but you want to always be careful that when children are doing this, that there's a parent involved.
Okay.
Because if the dog reacts negatively and the child doesn't know how to respond in a healthy leadership parenting type role, then it can backfire on us.
Okay.
And the dog will then learn, oh, I can object to what that child does to me, or I can push that child around, or maybe I don't have to listen to anybody anymore. So we always want to have that parent present to make sure that everything is successful.
Okay, so it's a good idea for children, but only with supervision.
Yes.
And if we're talking where there's a situation where there's no children, let's say, I don't know, a boyfriend and girlfriend, and they're starting to live together, have the other one start massaging the dog as well? At what level, what pace? What would you suggest?
When you're talking about a partnership?
A partnership, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's about the dog's relationship with everybody in the family, not just one person. All the people in the family provide leadership, provide a trusting, loving relationship for that puppy. So that puppy needs to experience it with everyone, or that puppy might start to not have relationship with just men because only the woman worked with the puppy. So we need to make sure that it's like socialization, that puppy is getting experience with everybody.
Perfect. What would be next on the list, Elizabeth?
One big mistake that people tend to make
is
we get our puppies and we give them way too much freedom in the house. And we're sort of just hanging out with our dogs because that's what people do. And what happens is the puppy starts to be in charge of his world. He gets to sort of do what he wants to do 24/7. Go get a drink, come get a pet, look out the window, bark at a squirrel, you know, play with a toy. In his little doggy brain, he's thinking, ooh, what do I want to do next? And it should be that he's being engaged with his person or people, that they are saying, oh, come on over here, let's do this. Ooh, let's come on over here and do this. And you're shaping his behavior, you're teaching him, you're engaging his brain, and you're taking him out of recess. He's also starting to look to you for the answers. He's like, oh, what are we doing next? What do you, the leader, want to do? Instead of having the world sort of, you know, circle around him all the time and what he wants to do.
Someone on the other end, of course, the next logical question is, yes, but I work all day and I have to leave my dog alone. What would be, even though it's certainly not the best thing to do, what would be some good alternatives if that's the situation for someone?
Well, it is tough nowadays because everybody's working, and dogs are not meant to be left alone, essentially. They're a social creature, and they're meant to be with the pack. So there are some options. There are doggy daycares out there now that are providing, as long as it's a good doggy daycare, they're providing a great resource for people with their dogs, where the puppies can be socialized and kept busy and exercised. But that isn't always an option for everybody. So crate training, we think, has a lot of value. It keeps your puppy safe and keeps your stuff safe.
Right.
And allows you to control the puppy's environment a little bit better. They learn how to be alone. They learn to self-entertain. They learn to wait until you come back.
For those people, sorry to interrupt you, for those people that just may not know what crate training is, even though so many of us do, could you give just a really quick description?
Crate training is the theory that we are creating a den environment for the puppy, which is a natural environment. And what we do is they started 10 years or 15 years ago by using the airline kennels, those hard plastic airline kennels as a crate.
Yeah.
You're basically creating a nice little den environment for the puppy to be in. Typically, they will not soil their den, so it's a great opportunity to help with house training. But you want to make sure that the puppy is not spending his life in a crate.
Right.
A couple hours here, a couple hours there is very good for him, but he needs breaks, he needs entertainment, he needs play, he needs to be let out to go to the bathroom and to be fed. So it's good that if you could maybe even have somebody come halfway through the day, or if you can come home from work halfway through the day and let him out and give him a good long break.
Or get a neighbor that you trust or someone that you trust to come over. Maybe you could do it for them once, they could do it for you, trade.
Yeah, that would be great. And crate training is something that typically you're going to use maybe, you know, off and on for the first year of the puppy's life, and you may not use it a whole lot after that once they've matured and they've learned how to be alone at home in the house. And not get into trouble, but it's a skill that they will always have, so that, you know, if ever you needed to keep them quiet, maybe after surgery, the crate is a great opportunity to keep them safe while they're recovering.
And it's not to be used when they do something bad, is that correct?
No, it is never, ever a punishment. It's always a positive environment.
It's always a good thing because they'll go to the crate when they feel tired or stressed or just to relax.
Absolutely, absolutely. As we tell our dogs, go to bed and they just go hop in their crates. It's what they learn to love. They learn to feel safe in that place. And it's sort of this whole skill to help them prepare for life. It's if you ever have to travel with your dog and you put them in the crate, they already have the skill. It's already done. You don't have to worry about it. So it's no matter where they are in the world, if they love their crate and they have their crate there, they're already at home.
Normally they're made like they're made of steel normally. Can they be made of other materials?
Yeah, there's actually three different, and actually there's a crate training article on our website that people can go to.
Afterwards, I'm going to leave some links in the show notes as well, and yeah, we're going to send you to Elizabeth's site. She has some great info on it.
Yeah, and that article tells you how to do a good crate training job. It should only take about three days or so to really teach them to be well crate trained. But the crates can come in a sort of hard plastic type environment. They can come in more of a wire cage-looking environment, and they can come in a soft canvas, almost like a tent-like environment. So each dog is going to have his preference. Our dogs all tend to like the hard plastic ones because they create a dark den-like environment. Other dogs enjoy the more cage-like wire environments, and other dogs are just fine with the canvas ones. But you kind of have to know what's going to work for your dog.
Okay, but it's a place to relax. It's never to be used as a punishment.
Never a punishment, no.
What would come next after that?
Just the house training, just to remind everybody that house training takes time. It's a matter of patience and consistency. You know, everybody's an individual, and especially if you've ever raised kids, you know you didn't potty train your kids all in one day, and nobody really learns it in the same time frame that everybody else learns it.
What's an average time? I mean, if, like, some people might think it should take 2 days. Like, how long does it normally take? There's always exceptions, but normally, how long should it take if the dog has, let's say, never been crate trained, never been house trained?
To be honest with you, it would be hard to put a perfect number on that.
Okay.
Some people will say, oh, my dog, you know, in 2 days had never had an accident again. And another person might say, oh, it's been 6 months, and they still occasionally have an accident. And it might be that a dog is good for 3 weeks or 3 months, and then, oops, we have an accident. And then they think, oh, you know, it's all, you know, my dog is failing at house training. But it's not. It's just accidents will happen. You just have to say, I need to be a little bit more aware. And what could I have done differently to perhaps catch that opportunity? Puppies need to potty a lot.
Right.
And so when they wake up from a nap, in the middle of play sometimes, when they've taken a drink after they've eaten, and periodically in between, they have to be taught how to hold it for a long time. Usually the rule of thumb is 1 month in age equals 1 hour of being able to hold it. But again, each puppy is going to vary.
And you've seen them all. You've seen different breeds house train quickly, and some take longer. This, you know, two bulldogs, one might take 2 weeks, one might take a month and a half, like you say. Is that right?
One might take 6 months.
Right.
Usually,
okay.
Sometimes they say you don't really know if your dog is completely well house trained until they're a year old, which is, you know, it feels extreme, but I want to present a realistic picture so people don't give up too early.
Right. And people just shouldn't freak out about this. Once they're trained, but if they take a little longer, they're doing their best. They're never soiling to madden you or to anger you. It's never a revenge thing. They just haven't learned it yet.
Right. And maybe they did ask. Maybe in their mind, they just walked past the door, and that was their way of asking you, but you didn't notice or didn't understand, and they think, oh, well, I went to the door and nobody did anything, so I'll just potty here. So a lot of times we have to see, how did we miss that opportunity to create success?
And this is something that, of course, they could do with training right at the beginning of the list as well.
Oh, immediately. Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's got to start immediately. And it's a matter, too, of heightening the person's awareness to their puppy's needs. Puppies have to potty a lot.
Right. They do indeed.
Yes.
Next, I would say we'd have to be talking about exercise.
You know what? Can I add one more thing?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. You had asked about breeds. For the potting, smaller breeds do have a tougher time traditionally being potty trained. And that's just kind of a heads up for anybody that's getting a toy breed.
Is that because they have smaller bladders?
To a point, but really it's hard to catch them. They're so little, and they just scoot behind the couch, or they pretty much, when they even squat to pee, you almost don't even see it, and you don't know it until after the fact, and then it's too late to correct them. So a lot of times taking on a toy breed takes on a little bit more challenge for house training. So I just kind of want to give a heads up for that.
And people should just be a little bit more patient, that's all.
Absolutely.
Once they're usually trained after a while, I mean, however long it takes to get them trained, once they're usually trained, unless there's a serious ailment after, are they usually house trained for life?
Again, all things in balance. If a dog has diarrhea and he, you know, and we just aren't aware of it, and he's in the middle of the night, you know, caught off guard, he's going to have an accident. And we just have to know he was sick. It's not his fault.
And it's not the end of the world either.
And it's not the end of the world. You just clean it up and go on.
Exactly. I'm in total agreement.
Yeah. So it just, you know, these are animals, and they're kind of perpetual kids, and they're going to make mistakes, and it's not their fault all the time. So we just have to be a little forgiving.
As we should. And what would be coming next after the house training?
Okay, let's actually go to feeding, because that's really appropriate for house training.
Okay.
Little tiny puppies need to be fed, you know, a few times a day. Again, this is going to vary from size of dog, and as they mature, you're going to try and take that down to about 1 to 2 times a day. Certain breeds do require to be fed more often, but I just want to make sure everybody understands that puppies need to be fed frequently. They were nursing off of their mom a lot, and we're kind of weaning them from that process. But you don't want to just put down a bowl of food and have the puppy pick at it all day. That's what's called free feeding. And what it does is it doesn't teach the puppy to eat proper meals. It actually creates often a picky eater. And puppies are built to eat a meal, go to sleep, play for a while, go potty, come back and eat another meal, not just pick throughout the day.
You mean they're not, you know, they're not like us where they snack on this and snack on that, get a Mae West in the middle, get a chocolate bar here and there?
Yeah, they're not deer. They don't graze.
Okay.
They eat proper meals. And that aids in potty training, because if you put in three meals a day into your puppy, you can pretty much count how many meals are going to be coming out.
Right.
Okay, but if they're grazing all day,
right,
then they're going to need to be pooping all day.
So it makes sense to feed them at the same time, too, for the same reason? Everything happens more like clockwork? It's more predictable?
To an extent. The predictability comes in that when you feed them a meal, they're going to need to go, and you're going to need to know your puppy, they're going to need to go immediately or in 20 minutes, somewhere around that zone. And they may not only have to potty once, but they might have to potty a couple times within that session. But you don't have to feel like you have to feed at 6 o'clock exactly, at 12 o'clock exactly, and 6 o'clock exactly. Because personally, I'd prefer to have a more flexible schedule. Maybe I feed them at 6:15. Maybe I feed them at 5:45, so that they're not looking at their little tummy clocks and saying, you need to feed me now.
Right.
And getting very demanding.
Right. But within, let's say, it should be somewhat predictable, I would guess.
Yeah.
Like, if you're feeding 5 o'clock one day, not 7 o'clock the next day, and 5 o'clock the day after that, and 7 the day after that, maybe more within, let's say, an hour or an hour and a half every time?
That would be, it's nice. But again, it's not mandatory.
Okay.
In nature, animals, it's arbitrary when they're going to get their next meal. So you're doing really well by giving them, you know, 4 good meals a day or 3 good meals a day. And they're lucky to get that.
Okay. And when do they get to exercise?
Exercise happens naturally. For young puppies, exercise should mimic what they would have in nature. That they would be hanging out at the den, playing with the other puppies, then sniffing about, going potty, coming and getting a meal, taking a nap, and then playing with the other puppies again. But they monitor sort of their own activity level. And they can play pretty intensely for about 20 minutes, but then they're going to zonk and sleep really hard for a while. And people make the mistake of thinking, oh, I've got a golden retriever or a Labrador. They need lots of exercise. Yes, they do need lots of exercise, but not lots of forced exercise for a really long time. If you take a young puppy out for a 2-mile hike, that's way too much on his little bones and ligaments and muscles. He needs to have shorter spurts of more frequent exercise instead of big, long bouts of exercise.
And the ultimate schedule would be something like what? If someone had, you know, if someone wanted to give that dog the best life possible, what would be your ultimate schedule?
It depends on the breed.
Yeah.
But you're gonna play with them in the house. That's exercise. You're going to stimulate their brains by teaching them. That's exercise. You're gonna throw the ball. Take them out maybe for a little bit of leash work so that they learn how to have good manners on a leash. But frequent little 20, 15, as they get older, 30-minute bouts. But not until they're about 10 months old do you really want to start thinking, ooh, I'm going to take my dog for a hike.
Okay, because you could see how people could easily mistake, oh my God, just like you say, people think retrievers need all kinds of exercise, and they do, but they don't need it for a 2-hour shot. In fact, that's bad for them.
Right. You're setting them up for damage potentially later on. Things like hip dysplasia and elbow dysplasia can be as much environmental as it is genetic. And what's happening is you take them out on their walk on hard pavement and you're just pacing along. Their little muscles will support that body and those bones and joints for only so long. And then those muscles are depleted of their energy, and now you're grinding bone against bone. And so you can create a future of arthritis or hip dysplasia or elbow dysplasia or ligament problems.
Okay. Small bouts of exercise, not extended play for puppies.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I'm getting the feeling that, wow, that's a lot of information, great information and a lot of information. Is there anything else that we should know about starting our puppies off right? Is there anything you want to tell us little more?
Our biggest message is always, this is a balance of love, trust, and respect. We are all really, really good at loving our puppies. But we also have to build in them the relationship of trusting us, that we will always keep them safe, we will never let harm come to them, and respecting our word. And that comes with teaching. So it's a balanced relationship. And if it is missing any one of those three ingredients, the dog will become unbalanced somehow, possibly insecure or fearful or too assertive or too independent. So we have to make sure that as much as we love our puppies, we also teach them and develop a relationship of trust.
I would wholeheartedly agree. I know that I've seen your video, Elizabeth and Doug, it's both your video, and I've learned quite a lot about it. And I'm sure there are other people that would like to watch it or listen and learn from you. Could you tell us a little bit about your video?
Sure. It would be actually a wonderful thing for people to start out with a new puppy, even before they get the puppy, because it teaches you so much about how dogs think and how people can be the best dog parent to them to raise a good, well-balanced dog. And it's almost three hours long. It's just huge. But it takes you all the way from beginning of understanding who dogs are and who we need to be all the way to off-leash distraction work. Oh, I was just to say, so it covers everything from how a dog thinks and feels about the world to how we can best teach them.
And I know it also, because I've seen it, it also talks a lot about an important issue of leadership as well.
Leadership is huge. It's who dogs are. They require good leadership, just like kids require good parents. Children without good parents aren't going to have good, you know, general manners or confidence in the world, and maybe even start acting out badly. Same thing with dogs. For dogs, it is so pure and prime in them that the minute they look at you and when you bring them home, they're saying, are you the one in charge here?
Right.
And if you don't answer that somehow, then they think, oh, well, you're not much help. You don't seem to care, so I guess I'm in charge. And the second they start to take charge, then they start to lead the way, and then we start to have more problems. It is very important that when you feed your puppy, you only put the food down for 10 minutes. And if he doesn't eat it, it means he's not hungry enough right now, and you're going to take it away, and you will offer it to him again the next meal. Again, I was talking about free feeding sets them up to become picky eaters, but it also sets them up to become leaders. In a dog's mind, whoever owns the food is the one in charge. So if you leave the food down and they believe it belongs to them, then they think, ooh, I must be in charge. But if they see you put the food down and take the food away, then they look up to you and say, oh, gosh, you're the one in charge. So it's a very simple way to provide leadership as well as creating a good, healthy eater.
So don't put your food down and then call your dog. Let your dog see that you are the food provider.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about all those silly things about, you know, taking a bite first or making sure you eat your meal first. That's really not necessary. They just need to see that it came from you and that you're the one that can take it away.
Excellent. I so personally agree with that as well, and I was so happy to see it well explained in the video.
Oh, thank you.
So if people do want that video, they can go to tenderfoottraining.com.
Oh, absolutely, and just order it through PayPal, yeah. And anybody can call us 7 days a week until 9 o'clock at night, Colorado Mountain Time, if they have questions or need help. And especially if they've seen the video and then they say, oh, well, you know, what if I do this or this with my dog? And we can help talk them through a lot of things.
Perfect. Excellent support. Okay, so I'd like very much to thank you, Elizabeth. Please say thanks to Doug. I know he's probably not far by as well. I know you guys are a great team.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for all this excellent advice. As you know, this is going to be listened to by many, many, many people, and it will help a lot of people. So you're doing an excellent thing for everyone by sharing your info.
Well, thank you so much, and that's our goal in life, is to help the dogs and their people.
Perfect. So thanks so much, Elizabeth. And we intend to maybe do some more podcasts this year as well. Is that good for you guys?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we're going to work out a schedule, and you might be on sooner rather than later.
That'd be great.
So thanks very much again, Elizabeth, and we'll be speaking to you shortly, we know.
Thank you.
And so that was our interview with Elizabeth Simpson of Tenderfoot Training. We hope you learned a lot. I know I did. As always, please feel free to comment about this podcast or any other on the bulletin board. Just go to pets.ca, find your way to the bulletin board, or just do it directly through the blog, pets.ca/blog, and it will be our pleasure. And don't forget to give your little fur babies a little scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now.